going out to the trap. Each one is telescoping, as you said. All the screws are good tight. The screws are stainless steel. Every element, when I put it together, including the ones I put, the redid with the traps, all have that gray gook. They use the oxidizing stuff as a name for it. All brand new, all put in there nice and fulfilled. But good electrical contact, that's all in place. Nothing is loose, nothing is corroded. Let me drop, I'll tell you one more thing. I made very sure that when I put these top quality six spades on this wire, the proper gauge and so forth, I burnished and polished the connections at the tower itself, put all stainless steel screws, stainless steel washers, everything stainless steel. Everything is gleaming. And by the way, if you look at this beam being its age, it looks like it just came from the factory. It's been coated with WeatherGuard from the day I bought it. And it just gleams in the moonlight, sparkles in the sunlight. It's a beautiful condition. And I'm just overwhelmed about the situation. But whatever it was, maybe God put his hand on the antenna and said, enough with you, Vito, I'm going to help you. I don't know. But so far we're holding out, so we'll see what happens. We take it one step at a time. If the problem is gone, it's gone. So be it. Go ahead.
Don, interesting. One last question. You did say something along the lines of the actual coaxial cable with the lugs on the end of it. You made it sound like the shield of the coax cable goes to a lug that goes to the boom of the antenna, the grounding of the antenna, so to speak. And the center conductor with its lug goes to the one of the input elements of the antenna. That's what it sounded like you said. I'm not quite sure if that's true, and how the other half of the driven element is being fed. Over to you, Vito, K2RIW.
Yes, the shield is going to the strap, which is tied to the boom. It's all tied together. There's continuity everywhere, if you had an ohmmeter, from that element itself to ground, or to the, even to the tower. But the other side of that same driven element is high and dry. I use that language meaning it's on two plastic or whatever they may be insulators, and it's not making contact with the boom. It's like the neutral panel, neutral bar, and a fuse panel. It's off the metal cabinet. It's off with plastic standoffs, where the ground side is touching the actual cabinet. So it's not touching the cabinet. It's not touching the boom. It's high and dry. So the center conductor goes there, and that's the one that's radiating, you know, on the left side, looking at it, looking up, and the one on the right side is the center conductor. That's what I have up there. And everything is polished, clean, sparkling, all stainless steel, in perfect, perfect condition. I'm a pain that way. I just go up there 10 times if I have to make sure it's right. And this is what I have as we speak. That's why I was shocked that the problem still prevailed. With the last link of problem was only that 18-foot piece of cable, I was assuming. Go ahead.
Okay, I'm going to dwell on this a little bit longer. The center conductor of your coax cable that's feeding the antenna, that's closest to the antenna itself, right, closest to the driven element. Center conductor goes to, I think in your case, left-hand side, left-hand half of the driven element. The right-hand side of the driven element, where does it go, Vito? Is that grounded to the same strap where the shield of the input coax cable is grounded? Over to you, Vito, K2RIW.
Yes.
Okay, so one half of the driven element is grounded to the strap, to the boom, and to the shield of the coax cable. The other half, the center conductor of your input coax cable, goes to the left-hand side of your driven element. Is there a bounding device between the antenna feed and the rest of the transmission line going down the tower into a lightning arrestor? Is there some kind of a bounding device, whether it be a poor man's balun, multiple turns of coax cable, or a unidella? Is there a balloning device somewhere in the system? Over to you, Vito, K2RIW. I've got the picture, and that's the original way that TA-33 Senior did it. I have to look that one up, and so you've got a bit of a mystery. It sure is nice that it turned good. It's a bit uncomfortable not knowing what in the world was wrong for the last 2 months that was giving you all this grief. Okay, maybe he smiled on you for this case. I think you said you had another question, Vito. Over to you, K2LIW and the TechNet.
As one final comment now, the other question I have is in relation to my, I have a, what do you call it, a Kenwood TS, is it TM, look at the number here, God help us, TS-940S transceiver. It's about 30 years of age, and it functions very well. Hal had to do some work on it in a few years ago and a couple of issues, but it's been working perfect. It's cosmetically beautiful. It's fantastic. The strangest thing happened, in my opinion, last week. I lost the 40-meter band transmission portion of it. Receives great, but it won't transmit anymore. It was going a little silly. The was jumping up and down the meter on the panel. The bird meter was going up and down with power out and dropping and going up and dropping. Finally, it just dropped off completely. I hit the band selector switch, which John has suggested. I did it before, but has no bearing on the situation. Besides, if that was a problem, I'm guessing the receive portion wouldn't be working either. Someone had said to me maybe there's other components associated with that the switch that are related to the transmitting part of that band. So I lost 40 meters. Everything else is operating perfectly. So back to you.
Yeah, many of those band switches have quite a few decks to them. Some of those decks have contacts that are used during the receive function. Some of those decks have got contacts used during the transmit function. Rocking that switch back and forth, and or if the cabinet is opened up and you squirt tuna cleaner on the various decks and work it back and forth, that's a very good thing to try. Rotary band switches on older pieces of equipment easily build up oxide and start becoming intermittent. But rocking the switch back and forth, flipping it between all of the bands, in other words, flipping it from 80 meters up to 10 meters, back and forth a whole lot of times, sometimes is worth doing. So you've done a bunch of rocking, and still, if I understand correctly, receiving function on 40 meters is working, transmitting function, no power output. I think you're saying it was jumping around as if it was in some kind of a failure mode, and then it stopped transmitting entirely. I believe the 940 has 6146 final tubes, but I think the rest of the rig is almost all solid state, if I remember correctly. And so, after you do the usual things of, let me drop, rocking that band switch and every other knob on the front panel, rock it a little bit, even if it's a tuning control and you move it 5 degrees to the right and 5 degrees to the left. Move every single control on the front panel, every single control on the back panel, rock them all a little bit, pound your fist on the top of the rig, and rock that band switch. These are all mechanical things that are worth a try, which are non-destructive if it's done in a reasonable manner, and sometimes intermittent contacts and something funny going on with, if it was a tube-type rig, like my Drake R4C, for instance, which is a receiver that's all made out of tubes, and tubes get all kinds of flakes inside at times, and if you pound on your fist on the outer cabinet, good things can happen many times. After that, if you've done all these things and you can't bring it back to life, I guess it's time to visit Andy, WA2CDL, and have him take a look at it, Vito. WA2PJF, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Okay, this transceiver, I'm 99% sure there are no tubes whatsoever. It's all 100% solid state. The band switch is not a band switch. It's a little push-it-in type thing, a little button. The band switch you're talking about, you rock back and forth like I have on my KWM2, yes, that I've done it many times because I lose power output, and I just rock the band switch back and forth, everything comes back to life again. So on the KWM2 being fully mechanical, this is different. This is a little tiny little key. You just push it in, touch it, and it makes contact. Little rectangular little buttons. It's the front panel's loaded with them. So everything I've tried, everything I've manipulated within reason, as you say, has no bearing on correcting the problem. It just...
Andy or Hal, K2IW and TechNet,
And don't worry about those signals. I'm hearing you beautifully on the input.
I have had, but no big deal. I have a very strong son. But truthfully, you wouldn't guess by the way I'm talking on the radio this evening on this 2-meter band. My interest in amateur radio for 55 years of a ham operator is not there anymore. And I come in the radio room and I walk out. I don't have the patience so much to operate. I'm a CW, that's my favorite, and even that, it's burned away. So I really don't care about this radio. And if I were to move from this facility to another house somewhere else, whether I go to Florida or down the street, I'd encourage and not bother even building an antenna or putting it back on the air anymore. So I read about that, and until they come to pass, I decide to sell it. Of course, I will tell the other person what the situation is. Dick, go ahead, back to you.
As I see it, Vito, it sure is sounding like this is not much of a, it's not hampering you very much, the fact that 40 meters on one of your transmitters, on the transmitter, is not working. It's a minor annoyance, and you can go around that. And you've got lots of resources to get it fixed. Lots of people will help you. So that's a future project. The antenna was much more important. And I know what CW is like. To the people who love it, you take, for instance, my former guy who used to help me out an awful lot. My goodness, am I terrible on that. Former call letters. And he
gave you why.
Hey, Dave. Yeah, who called me? Hey, Dick.
Yeah, I got an interesting little TV tidbit for you. All last week, the two antennas that they put on the World Trade Center were pointed north, and they were doing measurements. And this week, they are pointed east. And if you're interested, they come on the air at 11:30 at night and go off at 6 in the morning. And the VHF is on channel 12. And the UHF is on channel 32. Thought I'd throw that at you. K2RIW, K2J.
Very fine, Eric. So channel 12 and channel 32, starting 11:30 at night from the new Freedom Tower, the new World Trade Center. And something to look forward to. And yes, they used to be aimed north, and now they're going to be aimed east. So we're being favored out here. And out of curiosity, any idea how much power is being transmitted on the two channels, Eric, go ahead.
I could tell you exactly. I have it on a piece of paper. I think the VHF is 5 kWe. And even while the antennas were pointed north, you could get a...
Okay, we heard you say that the VHF is 5 kW. The UHF on channel 32, is that also 5 kW, Eric?
I think it's around 55 or 60 kilowatts EOP. I have to look it up. I'm not absolutely sure, but I think it's in that neighborhood.
Okay, 55 or 60 kilowatts because of a lot of antenna gain, whereas the VHF is only 5 kilowatts. And obviously you have less antenna gain and probably less transmitter power there. Is that roughly what's going on, Eric? Go ahead.
Yes, less antenna gain, a lot less antenna gain, and quite a bit less power. I don't know if it's that much less power, but somewhat less.
Okay, so starting at 11:30 tonight until 6 in the morning, will they be transmitting test patterns or just dead carrier? And is it only on Sunday night? Any other time during the week? Over to you, Eric.
I don't know because it's Memorial Day. If anybody's doing anything tonight, it'll probably resume tomorrow night or the night after. It's been every night. They send a van out with a Rosen-Schwartz automated setup. Basically tells them where to park the damn thing. They push the button and makes all the readings. And no, you don't transmit dead carriers. No such thing. One of them has CBS on it, and the other one has NBC on it. So, you know, it'll be the same as you get on 2 and 4.
around making antenna pattern plots or coverage area plots, and it's making making measurements from what, roughly a 20-mile radius around the Freedom Tower. Is that true, Eric? Go ahead.
I think one of the receipt points the night before was, the first one was not quite as far as you are, but somewhere in Huntington.
Interesting. Somewhere in Huntington. Okay, not as far as I am. I'm trying to think now. Yeah, this, if I went from my house west, interesting question is how far would I have to go before I leave Huntington? I think the answer is only about 2 miles, mile or two, in that order. And now I'm out of Huntington and, well, hold on now. I'd be out of my town. I would be into Melville. That's still Huntington Township. Okay. I'd probably have to go 4 miles before I leave the town. So when you said Huntington, you probably mean Huntington Township, one of the 32 communities of Huntington Township. Is that what you meant, Derek? Go ahead.
More than likely. I really didn't specify Huntington Station, Huntington Village. I suspect they were probably around Waltman, and maybe a little bit further east, but not much.
And Walt Whitman, the Walt Whitman Shopping Center and Walt Whitman Road is on the eastern side of James Hill, which is 400 feet above sea level. So Route 110, for instance, alongside of Route Walt Whitman Road, is right behind James Hill, which is reasonably well blocked to the west. So I'm a little skeptical if they're going to locate there. Good information. The next person who was on our list was Joe, W-A-2-L-Y-Y. And by the way, the guy whose call it is, I was having trouble thinking of, because he's a silent key for a number of years now, was Mel, K-2-K-E-Y. He was my my sidekick and co-net control person up until, thank goodness, John came along, KC2WGB. So Mel had also, what was I trying to pick him up? He had done lots of experiments with various kinds of antennas that were very useful. Let's see what Joe's got to say tonight, W2LYY. How are those electrons treating you tonight, Joe? K2LYW in the TechNet.
And that's it, is working.
Oh, just fine there, Dick, W-H-Y-Y. Well, my question is just about what you just talked about. I was receiving both RF-12, which is putting out 12-10 digital, that's WNBC, and on RF-32, I was getting 32-10, which is CBN. I made some signal strength measurements. Would you be interested in knowing what those ended up being compared to other Manhattan stations?
Okay, fire away with that, Joe. And did you measure it in dB above a microvolt? What were you using for an antenna? And what kind of signal strength? And I think you're telling me it's on 12-10 and 32-10, I think, are the actual channels where the transmission is going. So were they stronger or weaker than the other channels you normally watch? Over to you, Joe, K2LIW.
Okay, I made the measurements on a service monitor, which has a 50-ohm antenna input on the spectrum analyzed portion of the service monitor, so there's got to be a little difference between coming off a 75-ohm system going to 50-ohm, but not very much. Okay, since all readings were done the same way, I got the same relationship between one channel to another. Okay, let's see. Let's start on the lower channel here. On RF-12, I measured minus 52 dBm. On RF-11, I got minus 56 dBm. And let's see, on channel 13, I got minus 60 dBm. These were all measured on the pilot carrier in a narrow bandwidth, like 20 kilohertz per division. On the analyzer. Let's see, going to UHF, on RF-31, I got minus 64. On RF-32, which is a test channel, I got minus 45 dBm. That was minus 64 dBm. And on RF-33, next channel up, I got minus 58 dBm. Now, here's something that's interesting. I went to RF21, which is the transmitter in plain view, and that was 2 dB weaker than the carrier on RF32. At RF21, I was getting minus 47 dBm, so the signal off of World Trade Center was actually a little stronger than plain view. Now, the question is, can you explain that, Dick?
No, I can't. And, yes, you've got a 50 ohm input to your, you've got a 50 to your monitor, but, was your television aerial aimable, and, were you aiming it at the appropriate transmitter in each one of those cases, Joe? Go ahead.
The answer to your question is yes. I have a rotator on my television antenna, which is an AC8200T, made by Weingard, and it's got an amplifier on it. There's only about a 1 degree difference in azimuth between the World Trade Center and the coordinates I have of what the old Trade Center building used to be. And where the new one is very close to that, within 100 feet or 200 feet, so it's like nothing as far as angle of degrees. But as far as the intense azimuth, it's about a degree difference or so. It's only on the south end of Manhattan. Anyway, so the antenna's azimuth I don't think would really have any effect at all. In fact, they even rotated it a couple of degrees either way, and it didn't seem to change the signal strength too much, about, you know, like 10 degrees either way. All readings stay pretty much right up there. Now, here's the funny part, though. For the signal on channel 12, I could get that one to go away when I turn the antenna at 180 degrees, because I get the Manhattan stations at a bearing of approximately 2, I think the correct bearing is like about 282, 283. So I can put the antenna at 102, that basically puts the antenna to the back of the signal to Manhattan. On RF31 and RF33, which is a PIXN, and WCBS, those two channels digitally went away. The other channel on RF32 did not go away. I can see it off the back of the antenna. There's no substitute for signal strength, is there?
We do know that the new World Trade Center, the new Freedom Tower, has quite a bit more altitude to it and a slightly different location from Empire. Boy, those signal strengths you're getting, those are lots of dBs of improvement. Various people have asked me from time to time, would it be a good investment to take all of the hardware that they've got at Empire State Building, go through all the rigmarole of moving it over to the new Freedom Tower because of its new higher altitude. And so when you start off at Empire, it's, let me pick a number, 1,100 foot of altitude, and you go over to the new Freedom Tower at 1,700 foot of altitude, you get a law of diminishing. Because you've made an extra 600 feet of altitude, but it's piled on top of the 1,200 feet you've already got at Empire, is it really going to buy you a 33% increase in signal strength because you get a 33% increase in altitude? And no, it doesn't work that way. Your range is a function of altitude square root. Square root of the number of feet of the altitude multiplied by a constant gives you the free space line of sight range. So the measurements you've made suggest that there's an awful lot to be gained. Now, maybe they've got brand new feed lines and brand new high gain antennas, shiny new antennas as opposed to Empire older feed lines and transmitters that are not quite as healthy. I mean, you've measured lots of dBs of difference here. In the case of channel 12, what was that number I see here? 52 versus 56 versus 60, that's a 4 dB or an 8 dB delta. But in the case of channel 32, my goodness, that's more than 10 dB, more than 12 dB ahead. That's a lot of steam. So that must be a very healthy antenna and a very healthy feed line up there at the new Freedom Tower. That's one possible interpretation. Let's see if Eric's got any good explanation for why the signal is so darn strong. KE2EJ, if you're there. K2RIW in the TechNet.
Dick, is he monitoring off of the rotatable antenna on World Trade?
We know that Joe is he's using a television aerial, a WineGuard television antenna, on top of the chimney of his house that is rotatable. So he's aimed at the broadcast center each time, if that's what you're asking. Go ahead.
So there's a test antenna on World Trade that rotates 30 degrees, correct?
The previous tests of these antennas at the New Freedom Tower, New World Trade Center, they used to be aimed to the north. As of this week, they're now aimed to the east. Is that what you're asking? Go ahead.
Yes.
Okay, they're aimed to the east, and Joe has a rotatable antenna, so Joe's getting lots of extra signal strength. I mean, he's getting a significant increase on channel 32, that test signal, versus the over-the-air broadcast channel 31 and 30. So let's see if Eric's got an extra KE2EJ, K2RW, if you're there, Eric.
K2RW, K2EJ. Okay, you've got a couple things working against you. You've got the difference in altitude. You also have, I don't remember what stations he's comparing it to. I'm just curious as to how he's reading his level. And also the slight aiming difference, you know. You gain a couple dB when you really peak on it, too. Now, it depends whether you're looking if you're looking for flatness of it, or if you're just going for maximum signal at any one point. Because it's, no matter how you look at it, it's multi-band. The additional altitude works for you, that's for sure. The antenna itself, which they physically move, that's all new stuff, you know, it's new pipe. And by the way, the pipe at Empire is not that old, and most of the transmitters are, the oldest one's probably coming up on, let's see, if we did this, it's probably coming up on 10, 11 years, but in the digital realm, it's, the amps are still the same, so, you know, the problems that you get with tubes, because some of them are tubes and some of them are solid state. K2RW, K2J.
To answer your question, he's measuring it on the dBm meter of a service monitor. Channel 31 is a popular over-the-air UHF channel, measures minus 64 dBm. Channel 32, this new test signal, minus 45, that's a 19 dB delta. And channel 33 is another popular over-the-air broadcast channel, where he measured minus 58. So this new channel test, channel 32, is 13 dB louder than channel 33, 19 dB louder than channel 31. That's a lot of decibels. You can't explain that by just altitude, as I see it, Eric. As I said, that was on his service monitor. KE2EJ, K2RIW.
Well, I won't. That's not my kind of measuring device, especially with these kinds of signals. So, I prefer a well-calibrated spectrum analyzer. But, you know, there's some differences just from the nature of the response of the antenna, the combiner that's behind it. Not everybody's generating the same amount of energy either. There's a lot of factors in this. You can't point your finger and say it's any one particular thing.
And in all cases, he's measuring the pilot tone, the 309.4 kilohertz above the low end of the band. He was using that as a test signal strength by zeroing in on it. And I'd like to believe that that pilot tone is something you can use as a power reference to the nearest couple of dBs. I'd like to believe that if I took the average signal strength across the whole 6 megacycles and compared it to the pilot tone at 309.4 kilohertz. I'd like to believe that that is a fixed ratio of pilot tone compared to total average power. Is that a reasonable assumption, Eric? KE2EJ, K2RAW?
WK2J. You better forget about that thing that even existed. Don't forget it was an afterthought. Every manufacturer has a different way of making it, which makes them not a good point of reference, anyway. It's not a good frequency standard, and it's not a good amplitude standard. And also, it depends upon the linearity of the transmitter, you know, the amplifiers themselves. Lots of funky stuff happens when you start introducing group delay and stuff like that. No, that's why I'm not a fan of using that as a measurement. If you're going to measure this, you're going to measure the average over the 6 megahertz and extrapolate from that. Your eyeball does the best job of it with a nice, well-calibrated spectrum analyzer.
Jay, you're about the best you could do with a well-calibrated spectrum analyzer would be to set it as wide as you can get, which would be probably either the 1 megahertz resolution bandwidth or in some cases the 3 megahertz resolution bandwidth, and or turn on the video bandwidth to something relatively small, like maybe 100 kc. Now you're going to get a nice smooth line across the screen. So is that the kind of measurement you're advocating, Eric? Go ahead.
Hi, K2IWP, 2J. You know, the cable TV field strength meters that are designed for digital signals essentially take the average over 6 megahertz because the peaks and valleys, even if it's the RPM, it's the same thing. Basically, you take a diode and you do a sample and hold and measure that voltage. And that's what they use. But anyway, the difference is between transmission over the air, there's so many different factors. It's not every station is licensed with the same ERP to start with, so that's one of the reasons for the difference. If I go to the FCC website, I can read out to you the actual power levels of these stations, and it'll correlate with the differences that the deltas that you see between stations, assuming that the antenna and the device making the measurements is telling the truth. K2RAW, K2J.
So one way of doing this would be to have a specific piece of test equipment which has a very clearly defined 6 megacycle brick wall filter, and now you average the power across that filter. But you did specifically say that you like using a spectrum analyzer. No spectrum analyzer has a 6 meg brick wall filter. You can select the resolution bandwidth of 1 megacycle. Occasionally you'll have one go up to 3 megahertz, but many spectrum analyzers, the widest filter you've got, the widest filter is 1 meg.
Let me correct myself. Let's call it a digital signal analyzer, okay?
Okay. Is that measuring peak envelope power each nanosecond and then doing some kind of an average? How is that making the measurement of power output?
I think there's about, on the one that I have, there's about 6 or 7 different methodologies. It actually can do it by simple. It's not smart, so. I mean, it's all the technology today. Because you've digitized, the thing digitizes 25 megahertz is a chunk, so, 6 megahertz is not that horrible.
Okay, so in other words, this instrument you're describing, you make it sound like it has a front-end instantaneous bandwidth that's 25 megacycles wide, that everything it sees is going into an A to D, and now you're looking at the average of the D with some kind of an average output. Is that true, Eric? Go ahead.
Yeah, Yes, but you know, the funny thing is that you as a human being can take a regular spectrum analyzer, set the resolution bandwidth to, say, 3 megahertz, and change the video bandwidth to, say, 50 or 100 kilohertz, and you get a pretty good idea of what the level is. It's not maybe an IST standard, but it's good enough to work with, you know?
You're basically using the techniques
in this particular...
You're basically doing a radio astronomy-like measurement. If you set the resolution bandwidth much wider than the video bandwidth, when you do that combination, you get a nice smooth line across the screen in the areas, in the frequency regions, where the transmitter is putting out power. And now, by way of dicky switching, so to speak, in other words, by allowing the signal to flow into the analyzer or stopping the signal to flow into the analyzer and looking how much that smooth line moves, you can make measurements below the noise level. You could have a signal that is a minus 10 dB signal to noise ratio, but still by the movement of that line, by radiometry techniques, you can still calibrate with extreme accuracy as to what is the specific power of that signal inside of that resolution bandwidth. So it's almost like what the radar people call bug under the rug measurements. Over to you, Eric, K2LAW.
Let's not forget that this is consumer, you know, broadcasting out for consumers. It's not military. But anyway, yeah, within reason. The funny thing is, I mean, the band that they're going out with is, you know, it's got a $100,000 thing in it that does everything. It literally does everything at the push of a button, so, you know. Basically, all you need is somebody to drive the truck around and push the button. He doesn't even have to know what he's doing. So that's where technology is taking it. But anyway, this is probably going to go on. I think they're going to move it to the south, not this week, or the beginning of next week. And they're going to do the same sort of thing, you know, Brooklyn, Staten Island, South Jersey. And then they go west, and that's it. Then the broadcasters decide whether or not they want to spend money. And by the way, nobody in their right mind would take out this stuff that they've got at Empire, because that's backup. You leave it there and put new stuff in. Actually, the way the World Trade Center is designed, it's one big room. So it's one shared space, whereas in the previous World Trade Center and Empire, everybody's got their own space with their own four walls. So this is a different kind of operation, which actually has reduced the cost to the individual broadcaster. K2RW, K2J.
Very good to know, Eric. I thank you. So one great big room. And let me think now. I think when you take the elevator to the observation deck of the new World Trade Center, I believe they take you something like 109 or 110 floors. I don't know if you have to walk up some additional floors after you get off the elevator. And they brag about the fact that elevator moves in something like 47 seconds from the street level to the top of the building. So if the building is something like 1,760 feet tall to the top of the mast, I'm going to guess, but 110 floors, 109 floors, it sounds like it's more than 10 foot per floor. And Empire also has something like 110 floors. Kind of amazing. Give me any correction you've got on this one, Eric. KE2EJ, K2RIW.
K2RIW, K3J. Well, unfortunately, I've not had the experience yet of being in the new Liberty Tower. But it's 1,776 feet. Okay, that's magic number, 1,776. You're a United States citizen, it should have some meaning to you. But Empire is a bit smaller, it's a bit lower, it's quite a bit older. It's a steel structured building built out of brick. So it's a different era of philosophy. And on top of the mooring mast, or the tower, that was an add-on, so... You know, there's a difference. But I believe the height of the spire on the
Liberty Tower is over 350 feet or 400 feet or some ridiculous number like that, which makes the building itself really a little bit smaller. K2RIW, K2EJ.
The very top of the new Freedom Tower, the top of that mast, I believe is the 1776. The habitable part of the structure is probably more like 1,300 feet or so. The very top of the mast at Empire, I'm guessing, is like 1,250 feet. Is it in that neighborhood, Eric? K2EJ? K2RIW?
No, as far as Empire goes, I think where the outfits are mounted, it's like 1190, I think. Oh, those numbers are not clear in my head, but I think it's in that neighborhood. I can look it up if you want.
I had remembered it as 1,200. You told me it's 1,190. We're dickering over 10 feet. Close enough. Not to worry. Okay. So it looks like the new building has roughly 1,200 to 1,700, so it's 7. It looks like it's 386 feet of difference on top of 1,200, so to speak. And if I calculate the difference in free space range, line of sight range, it's not going to be huge because you take square root of that number to see the real difference. But looks like they're getting some potent signals. So this week to the east favors us. Next week is going to be to the south, and the week after that's going to be to the west. So as Joe takes his measurements when they move the antenna, and I presume they're literally rotating the antenna on the mast, and do you have reason to believe that the antenna being tested is on the top of that mast, or is it somewhere in the middle of that mast? And are they just deciding which feed line to feed, or is the antenna itself being moved? What's your guess on that, Eric? KE2EJ, K2RIW?
Send you a picture of it. It's at the very top of the mast. The UHF is at the very tippy top. And you know, there's like little pancake rings, actually little places you can stand along the mast. So the UHF is between the tippy top with little conas and a lightning gathering device, the first ring, and the VHF antenna is between the first ring and the second ring. So when you look at it, that's what you see. The UHF antenna looks like a tube, and the VHF antenna looks like a turnstile array on a grid. So there you go.
Yeah, the main thing I'm curious about, though, right now they're aiming to the east. Last week they were aimed to the north. Do they have an antenna on four sides of the mast for each of those frequencies, and they're just selecting the right feed line? Or is the antenna itself physically being moved to the north side of the mast, to the east side of the mast? KE2EJ, K2RIW?
I saw that picture. There's eight guys in the picture. They make the antenna move. They make the antenna get from the place in which you can stand up to the mast. They're the guys that put it on the mast. I said, yes. The antenna's physically getting moved.
So it sounds like you've got a bunch of mounting bolts, or something close to that, on each of the four compass settings of the mast. So you physically unscrew this antenna from the north side of the mast and screw it to the east side of the mast right now. Now, if the antenna was a circular, omnidirectional-like thing, you would think that wouldn't matter a great deal, although you're still getting a significant amount of reflection off of the mast. So, do you believe the antenna itself that's being moved is a directional antenna? And so, if I've got a directional antenna that favors just one sector, like to the east, I can get 6 dB or more gain out of that, as opposed to a truly omnidirectional collinear-like antenna. KE2EJ, K2RIW.
The beam angle of the antenna is supposed to be about 90 degrees. I can do a little bit more. They are circularly polarized, and they're smart antennas, just on the UHF side anyway. The VHF side is a different animal. It's like two turnstiles on a reflector. It's really four turnstiles. You know, if you take a look at a picture of it, you'd find it interesting. But, you know, this is a test. The test organization who owns the building is paying for this. So, you know, they're trying to get customers.
Is there a place you can recommend that we go to, Eric, where we can see a picture of the antenna being used? Do you know of a website where we can go to see that picture? Over to you, Eric.
No, there ain't none. Well, I have a picture. I can forward it to you.
I hope you'll do that. I'd like to see a picture of the VHF and a picture of the UHF, but particularly the UHF. All the antennas on Empire that we're watching now on all of those channels that we watch from Empire, how many of those are circular polarized right now for those broadcast antennas, Eric? I know that your antennas on channel 21, I believe, are CP. Are essentially all of the television broadcast antennas on Empire, are they also circular polarized? KE2EJ, K2REW?
K2REW, KE2EJ. Well, there's different varieties of what's called circular polarization, and there's different ways of manufacturing it. But for all practical purposes, all the U's and all the V's are circularly polarized, and so are the FM's.
Okay, and do you believe the so-called axial ratio, in other words, the quality of circular polarization, is moderately good, like a 2 dB of axial ratio? Would you make a guess like that? Eric, go ahead.
Yeah, actually, you can prove that pretty easily. I go to a fringe area of an FM station, pick one up that, is horizontally polarized, and pick one up that's circularly polarized, and compare them. You'll find that what they actually operate with looks pretty good.
Now, I believe that a number of the antennas at Empire are a shared service. By that I mean multiple channels on slightly different frequencies are using the exact same antenna. And most of the antennas that I've ever worked on, to get the standing wave ratio low across a particular frequency region of multiple channels with difficulty, that is doable. To simultaneously make the actual ratio very low on multiple frequencies, that may be a conflict of interest. KE2EJ, K2REW.
K2REW, KE2EJ. Yeah, it is a conflict of interest, but the methodology is that when you order the antenna, you know where you're going to be, approximately. So, you know, the antenna is designed to operate on channels. In the case of the CBS antenna, you've got, 32, 33, 31, 40, 28, and one other. And then on the Fox antenna, you've got, whatever, a bunch of channels it is. And as far as the VHFs go, by the way, the high V's are all in essentially instead of bat wings. And they all work together. But there's compensation in the slot antenna. So how they do it exactly, I couldn't tell you because I really don't know. All I do know that it seems to work. K2REW, K2EJ.
Here's a question you can answer for me. When I'm watching CBS, which is on RF channel 33, I can also see the exact same programming on RF channel 22. So, from my point of view, CBS is on 22 and 33. Now, maybe I'm getting that 22 from some other location other than Empire. KE2EJ, K2REW.
You're getting 22 from, I think it's from Ridge. They were originally going to put 22 in Plainview, but they went a little further east to get the synchronous transmitter going.
Aha, that explains it. Because 22 is weaker, and I don't have a rotator on my antenna yet. My TV aerial is aimed to the west. Ridge to me is almost dead east. That explains it. So they're doing that to get coverage on the eastern end of Long Island. What I think is going on with CBS. And so that Ridge antenna probably carries them well out beyond Manorville, well out beyond Riverhead. What do you think, Eric? KE2EJ, K2REW?
It's actually a network we can get at the east end.
55 is awful bad. You know, they own 55 now, which is actually, I think it's 29. Oh, I forget what they're on there. They're not on 55, obviously, because nobody should be up there. But some of the broadcasters are beginning to take notice, especially since a lot of people don't want to pay so much for cable.
Are you saying that over-the-air broadcast is suddenly experiencing a little bit more popularity, that people are dropping off of cable and going to over-the-air? So even though a year ago you telling me that people were predicting that over-the-air broadcast was possibly going to cease to exist, is it suddenly increasing in popularity? In which case, that makes me happy. KE2EJ, K2REW.
Oh, you live out there and you're shielded in this little world. You don't come to where the population densities are. But, yeah, actually, cable is losing a lot of subscribers, so is satellite. And what's happening is they're doing what's called over-the-top. Integrated.
You said they're doing over-the-top.
Fine. And complementing it with over-the-air television, and a lot of the many of the cities, the inner-city broadcasters, are offering, you know, a real potpourri of menu. I mean, even here, we've got some selection. K2RWK2J.
You started describing over-the-top, and then there was a dropout for about 45 seconds, Eric. So we missed everything from over the top until the last 10 seconds of what you just told us. Go ahead.
Yeah, they're calling over the top, you know, internet services. You can either get into a little box that goes into your TV, or if you have a smart TV, which has all the various internet apps already loaded into it for like Netflix and YouTube and things of that nature. And that's being supplemented by the subscriber by putting up an antenna, and many of the major cities are offering multiple services on their channel, which gives them, you know, gives the customer a really good selection. And then companies like HBO is now offering subscription tier through over the top or through your computer, however you want to call it. It still amounts to much less than the cable companies are charging.
So if I understand correctly, I can be getting HBO pay-per-view, so to speak, by way of an internet service, not necessarily by way of ordinary cable TV or ordinary satellite. It really is an internet service. Is that what over-the-top means, Eric? Go ahead.
That's the term that's been called. What it means is the box on top of the TV, over-the-top. Instead of it being connected to cable, it's connected to the internet.
Okay. Now, some people, by way of their cable TV, are getting a combined service of cable TV as well as internet, I presume, on some adjacent frequency region. So I'd like to believe that cable television and internet service are very digital, different formats or digital protocols. Is that true, Eric? Go ahead. K2REW.
Yeah, I've been trying to answer a question on the subject.
Okay, maybe Eric had called away. Go right ahead, Joe.
Yeah, my question was, were these antennas oriented east or north on 520.15? That's when I made the measurement. I'd like to know where the antennas were oriented on that day.
I think Eric told us that this week a 90-degree beamwidth is aimed dead east. And last week, or the week before, it was aimed dead north. And that some later week it's going to be south, and some later week it's west. So this last week, when you made those measurements, I think Eric's going to confirm for us that it was a 90-degree beamwidth aimed at dead east. However, Eric is reasonably unsure that you can use that pilot tone as a power reference. Let's see what Eric's going to say about all of the above, if he's still there. KE2EJ, K2REW in the second end.
So yeah, I was just letting you pick him up. I'm leaving space for you.
Yeah, this past week it's pointed east.